Now we have our speaker for this evening who's going to share her thoughts with us. And everybody, if you haven't met her, I know if you have met her, you're in love with her. And if not, about to get ready to fall in love with our Penny.
Yay! Hi, everybody. How are you? Wow, a microphone. I have notes. I'm going to read my notes here. Thank you so much. That was so awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that picking
Perfect.
Her up?
Perfect.
Is that okay?
Thank you so much. Hawaii, I have such a deep connection with Hawaii. My other Hawaiian friend just walked in too. Kim. She's just like Stephanie also, mine too. Yeah, we all want to, our dream is to be living there in our later on in our lives, right? Right. So awesome. Well, my name's Penny, or Penelope, whatever you choose, and I've been coming here for a long time. Long time.
How long?
62
Let's
years.
See. Gosh. My husband and I have been married almost 25 years, and to that, so maybe 27 years, I guess? Long time.
I
took a little break. Yeah.
Slightly down the second set of seats on my left.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That, it's been a... Yeah, I came when we were... they were in... first service I ever was in was on an Easter Sunday in Balboa Park. At one of the... That was the first service I ever was went to when it was Reverend Rose...
Really?
Was the Reverend, and Ken Davis gave me my very first healing on the stool and gave me my joy guide at that time named Pansy Little. That was a long time ago. We threw money down from the balcony.
And Swedenborg.
Yeah, and then the Swedenborg. Well, actually before that we were at the Scottish Rite Center for a long time. Went there every summer. Long time. Anyway. My talk tonight's going to be about dreams and the connection between the dreams and the spirit world and your thoughts. And I'm going to start with butterflies, and I'm going to end with monkeys. Okay, and in our Declaration of Principles here at the Fraternal Spiritualist Church, the third principle states that man can glean truth from all religions, philosophies, and science. And our fourth principle states, we believe man never dies, that so-called death is but a chemical change separating him from his outer or physical body. And when I was in college, I went to the Philadelphia College of Arts, now called the University of the Arts. I graduated in 1981. Eastern philosophies were part of my studies in the art college, too. We had to do all the stuff besides drawing and painting. Printmaking was my major. Eastern philosophies, we did a lot. I did a lot of studies of that. And I remember learning about this Chinese gentleman named Xuang Zi. And he's a very famous Chinese philosopher, and he lived about the same time Confucius did. And he was also the forerunner with Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu is the one that wrote the Tao Te Ching, and the Tao is the Chinese kind of the way of life there. They call it, the Tao means the way. And I think it's really interesting that Jesus also calls himself the way. Very interesting to think about it that way. And what's so great about spiritualism is that we believe that pretty much all roads lead to Rome when it comes to religion and philosophy in this case, too. It's just food for thought. And anyway, getting back to Xuang Zi, one thing that really stuck out to me in college was the story about Xuang Zi. And you can never not mention the butterfly story without mentioning Xuang Zi. And what happened with him is that he had a dream that he was a butterfly. And in the dream, he was being a butterfly and just doing his butterfly stuff and just having a grand old time in his butterfly nest. And he didn't realize that he was Shuangzi. He was a butterfly. Then he woke up and he realized that he was Shuangzi, dreaming that he was a butterfly. So it really, really made him think. And he had to give this thing a name, you know, because there has to have some type of name. It was called a transformation of things. I mean, it's a whole study on all of this stuff. But the transformation of things, it's interesting. It's kind of like what Millie's philosophy on death is, or our church's philosophy on death is, it's but a chemical change. Death is but a chemical change. And I truly feel that dreams are an important connection with our spiritual realm in helping us to communicate with the free side of life. And I know I've shared a lot of my dreams in my past talks before, so I won't repeat them. But my favorite one that I did tell you in depth about my last, I think it was one of my talks was when my astral body was hovering over my sleeping body. And someone saw my astral body hovering over my sleeping body. And then they saw my ankles and my feet glow and went whoosh, right through the wall. And then woke me up and, like, scared living daylights out of them. But what was really interesting was that what I was dreaming exactly was what he was seeing. And it was really interesting. And then not that long ago, Julio and Carol Nicholas sent me a link on Facebook on the science of astral projection. It was an animated link. It was absolutely fascinating. It had everything to do with this dream of astral projecting and the silver cord and the attachment and all that. And there was a whole series of this science event on metaphysics. It was fascinating. I don't know where you got it, but I did see that whole thing, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. There's only one other time that I remember something when I was living in that was like a phenomenon like that. When I was living in San Francisco, right before I woke up, I felt something pressing against a hand, pressing down on my heart, and the presence said, "Something really important is going to happen to you today." And it did. I was like looking all over for what was going to happen. Well, I answered an ad in a paper, and that turned out for me to be, I ended up being an art director for Magical Blend magazine. It's called Blend now. I don't know about it anymore. It was 27 years ago. And I did mention through that, the last kickoff of that, I did an interview with Robin Williams. So I said that I'll do that. At some time I'll do it. I just have to connect with Michael Dare to have a monitor here to do it, because it'll be the whole talk or whatever, because it's like 20 minutes, a half hour, whatever. Really neat. Just for the record, I've been waking my husband up every night for the last 27 years. But it's because I snore too loud. Sorry, you know, but my husband really grounds me. He does. He totally grounds me. He's like, I'm going to skip along here. He's like the non-believer, the total non-believer, because he was brought up Catholic, you know. And, but he's like so cool. He's like really, he's like, oh, you know, he totally doesn't put it down, does it? You know, just, we do our own thing and all that. And it really helps us. You know, we really worked hard on our marriage and all that. But he recently told me about a dream that he had, his being a non-believer. His closest friend died in his early 50s a few years back. And he just woke me up a couple weeks ago and said, you know, I just had another dream about Mike. It's like Mike and Mike, Mike Huster, my Mike. He goes, you know, I keep having these dreams with Mike, and I see him in the dream, and I go up to him and I say, what are you doing here? You're dead. And Mike turns to me and goes, and he laughs, and I can hear his laugh, you know, and he laughs and goes, heck, you know, I'm not dead. And, you know, he continues on, and he laughs, and he continues on doing, and he goes, he keeps on having this dream, you know, in different situations. It's really neat, coming from a husband who doesn't believe anything. Anyway, And a few weeks ago, I asked kids in one of my art classes, because I don't know if you, all of you, some of you know I'm a president of Art Smarts Incorporated, and I teach art. I'm in 16 different schools. Some of you are my kids, and some of you are my instructors. And so anyway, I asked the kids, hey, have you ever had any dreams of flying before? All of a sudden, you would think that I had opened up the pearly gates or something, the floodgates. These hands start darting up and all, you know, and they can't wait to tell me their stories of their, you know, oh, yeah, like, I dreamt I was, like, at this fear of height, and I was going to jump off this cliff, and I jumped, and I was going to fall into the canyon. All of a sudden, I did a backflip, and I flew up, and I'm like, I'm flying all over the place, and I jump up, and I'm like, this is great. And it's like they can't wait to tell their stories. It's really great with the kids. And one kid even described their death experience and said, you know, I was dreaming that there was this tornado, and I was on an airplane with my mom and my family, and it's like all of a sudden the plane crashed, and it was raining, and then the windows blew open, and somebody helped me out of the window, but they helped me into this white light, and this white light was warm and encompassing and loving, and it was, I'm like, oh, you mean it's like a death experience? She goes, yeah, I died. It was like really, you know, really interesting. So, you know, all these kids have these stories, and then just Monday I asked this one kid, goes, oh, yeah, while I was in the dream state, my dad taught me that you can manipulate your dreams, or you can create your dreams. You can be in control of what you do in your dream state. And she goes, and I've been learning how to do it, and I've been practicing. And as soon as, this is like this little 8-year-old kid. And then as she's saying this, the teacher that's in the room doing her work, her head pops up and she goes, oh my God, my fiance does the same thing. And, you know, so it's like really, it's really kind of cool, you know. And anyway, and it's neat that the last few lessons in Millie's class, I'm in Tuesday night class with Millie, been in class for a long time. A lot of her lessons, you know, we give the God stories in the beginning of the class, and that, which is great, really kind of helps to know people. And then she gives a lesson from the Bible, because, you know, spiritualism is based on the Bible and the gifts of spirit. And so she'll give that, and then she'll give the messages from the angels, which is great. And then we have our break, and then we come back and we have circle. And that's really awesome, the feelings that we get from that and the images and all of that. But the lessons that the angels were giving in the last few weeks were on dreams and then in reincarnation. And it's like she had no idea this is what I was planning on talking. And I wasn't getting the inspiration from that, but that was just what was formulating. So it's like, imagine that, like synchronicity, you know. And, you know, and I also read, Googled it, and two-thirds of the Bible are about dreams and visions. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty neat about all those stories. And as for reincarnation dreams, just recently I had, and you're talking a few months ago, I had a vivid, vivid dream that I was a man, probably in my early 30s, mid-30s, and I knew I was dreaming the end of my life experience. And it was in medieval times, and I was wearing medieval clothing. I was being pulled in this wooden cart with two big wheels, not four wheels, two big wheels. I could draw this. I mean, it's, you can't make this stuff up, you know. The sides were made of these thick sticks with thorns on them, and it was like a cage, and I was sitting in there. And, you know, in medieval times, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. In medieval time, they had so many different inventions. It was just incredible time. So that was what this, it was an invention that the sides of this cage was going to come down like that in the middle, and then I was going to be burned at the stake or whatever burned. And then I looked around and I saw a lot of carts and a lot of people were going to be burned alive. And I knew it was for my spiritual beliefs, my religious beliefs, or how I was believing. And so I prayed, and I prayed that I knew that this was going to be a horrible death, and I didn't want to feel the pain. And then, so I don't recollect, I don't remember the end. All I know, so that pain was taken away. And it was kind of reminded me of when Jesus prayed on the cross for the pain to be taken away, and that was taken away during his last, not saying that I'm, you know, him at all. But anyway, so after a couple of weeks go by, we were in Las Vegas. And we're just going to these, you know how you sightsee and you go to the different hotels and just fabulous places. And but so it was my husband and my two daughters and I were walking by this restaurant, and all of a sudden I was taken aback because the side of this restaurant were the sticks, the same exact sticks that I saw in my dream. I'm like, oh my God. Well, they didn't have the thorns on them, but it was the same sticks. And I'm like, oh my God. And so it brought back this dream. And I'm like, oh God, you know, I gotta take a picture of this. All right, I took a picture of it, right? So then a couple of weeks go by and we saw the movie Elizabeth. And I don't know if anybody has seen the movie Elizabeth. Elizabeth was one of Henry VIII's daughters, and Mary was her older sister, and Mary was queen at the time. Mary was the daughter of King Henry VIII's first wife. And his first wife was extreme Catholic, and because he wanted a divorce from her, because he wanted to go with Anne Boleyn, the one that had her head chopped off, he started his own church, the Church of England. And so he kind of put her away and then did that, and then had a divorce from her. And so he had Mary. And Mary went, you know, during the line, she became one of the queens. And to kind of get back at all of that, she had thousands of people burned who were not Catholic. Anybody that wasn't Catholic was burned. And it was just, that's where the term Bloody Mary came from. And so Elizabeth was more like her father, didn't have the strict Catholic belief. So the movie opened up with people being burned at the stake, and then Mary dying, and then Elizabeth taking over a more gentle rule and ending of that period. But when I saw that, it was like brought back that dream again of like, oh my God, I was like at one time burnt for my belief system, burnt for my religious beliefs. And it's interesting how truths just keep popping up and popping up and popping up. The truth is a truth is a truth. And here I'm in this life, you know, I'm a spiritualist, and maybe this is how I've always believed in all my lifetimes, you know, and also getting back to the Eastern philosophies when we were studying Buddha and Siddhartha Gautama getting enlightened and turning into Buddha, and then you learned about bodhisattvas, and what a bodhisattva was is they are the people that vow to be reincarnated for eternity and help people to become enlightened and go into nirvana. And I'm like, wow, that really fits. That fits right for me. I'm a bodhisattva, you know, and no matter where I am, it's like, it's like all roads lead to Rome. You know, it's like, doesn't matter if you're on this side of the world or that side of the world, the truth is the truth is the truth. You know, it's fascinating to me. So, anyway, yeah, I was going to tell you about my husband, Mike, a little bit. I always drag him to the Christmas parties, too, just to let you know I do have a husband, you know. And but anyway, so, yeah, my stepfather in New Jersey, he's 86 years now. He's 86 years old. I was just back there for Christmas and with my two daughters. And he and my mom were married for, I don't know, maybe 20-some-odd years. And my stepsisters who live out here in Anaheim want him to move out here. So he was considering it. And so I had this dream that my mom walked down the stairs while he and I were having the conversation about it. And she just goes, well, did you discuss it with me? which is so unlike my mom. But, you know, I just thought, well, just the significance of her coming down the stairs, you know, another room, you know, it's that connection between the spiritual world, you know, it's just so easy as just walking down the stairs, you know. And he's not moving, by the way. He's going to stay back in New Jersey. Anyway, I highly recommend anybody to, I've said this before, to have a dream journal. When I lived by myself in San Francisco, I had a dream journal for a whole year, and I would remember up to 13 dreams in one night. And a lot of them were even precognitive dreams. And I noticed patterns of different dreams. You know, you have all sorts of the reincarnation, the precognitive, all sorts of different dreams. And I noticed that precognitive dreams would show you like 2 weeks in the future. And what it is to me, it's they're really useful because they're showing you a probable event. And because we are born with free will, we can choose to accept it or go the other way. It's up to us because we have free will. And that's just kind of the angel showing us, you know, okay, you can go this way, and this is a probable event, and this is what really, really, really might happen, but you don't really have to go that way, you know. It's your choice. So they can help you steer you in the right direction. And in 1981, I published this book here, right here. Funny, I just brought it out of my art stuff. It's called Death Experience. And the very first thing in the book, it says, I've come to the conclusion that for each person individually, the death experience is entirely different. And if I died today, the experience would be totally different than if I died tomorrow. In other words, I can change my mind because we were given free will. And all the events are probable, even in death. Like Xuang Tzu, who woke up from being a butterfly, your dreams can help you to watch your thoughts, to ponder more deeply, to help you to pray. And prayer really is just focused thought. Thought that's focused intention. And I've always believed that you create your own reality through your own thoughts and your own belief system. In other words, you get what you pray for, you know. And I've always believed that since I was a little kid, in my lifetime, I would experience a quantum leap in mankind's awareness. And I'm not going to be one of those that's going to say 2012 is going to be the year, you know, and all that, the end of the world, and the calendar, all that stuff. I'm, you know, because everything is probable, and because of our free will. And, you know, I want to share with you an example of how it works, and I'm going to read this to you, and I think it's a most fascinating theory that I've ever come upon. It's called the 100th monkey theory. And the Japanese monkey, Makata Fuscata, had been observed in the wild for over a period of 30 years. In 1952, on the island of Koshima, scientists were proving monkeys with sweet potatoes. They were providing monkeys with sweet potatoes. They were dropping them in the sand. And the monkeys liked the taste of the raw sweet potatoes, but they didn't like the dirt on it. An 18-month-old female named Emo found she could solve the problem by washing the potatoes in a nearby stream. She taught this trick to her mom, her mother. Her playmates also learned this new way, and they taught their mothers, too. The cultural innovation was gradually picked up by various monkeys before the eyes of the scientists. Between 1952 and 1958, which is the year that I was born, all the young monkeys learned to wash the sandy sweet potatoes to make them more palatable. Only the adults who imitated their children learned this social improvement. It's almost like, how do you use an ATM and how do you use a computer, you know? other adults kept eating their dirty sweet potatoes. Then something startling took place in the autumn of 1958. I won't say that I was born in the autumn of 1958, but I was. No. A certain number of Koshima monkeys were washing sweet potatoes. The exact number is not known. Let us suppose that the sun rose one morning. There were 99 monkeys on Koshima Island who had learned to wash their sweet potatoes. Let's further suppose that later that morning, the 100th monkey learned to wash potatoes. Then it happened. By that evening, almost everyone in the tribe was washing sweet potatoes before eating them. The added energy of the 100th monkey somehow created an ideological breakthrough. But notice, the most surprising thing observed by these scientists was that the habit of washing sweet potatoes then jumped over the sea. Colonies of monkeys on other islands in the mainland troop of monkeys at Takasakiyama began washing their sweet potatoes. Thus, with a certain critical number, when a certain critical number achieves an awareness, this new awareness may be communicated from mind to mind. Mm. Although the exact number may vary, the 100th monkey phenomenon means that when only a limited number of people know of a new way, it may remain the conscious property of only those people. But there is a point at which, if only one more person tunes in to a new awareness, a field is strengthened so that this awareness is picked up by almost everyone. Now, I think that's the end of that. But personally, I think that we witnessed evolution in its process. And I totally think that that's absolutely phenomenal. And I believe that with spiritualism, with our belief system, we have that 100th person, that person that walks through that door. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal. And you watch, you'll see that it's going to happen one day. It's that quantum leap, that it's science. It's the science, I'm telling you. And anyway, in conclusion, I have a dream. A dream that one day we will all realize how we are all connected, in or out of the body. There is no death, only oneness, only love. Thank you for this time. Wow.